Hey, welcome to another week of Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. Lauren Fox.
And Andrew Hansen.
It's the names they gave us, I guess. So it's kind of almost become second nature here in New England. They've had 12 parades since 2000.
Yep.
12. And were the 90s were devoid of any parade of any kind.
Is that right?
That's got to be accurate. The Red Sox didn't win anything. The Bruins didn't. Celtics didn't.
Right. Celtics won it.
Patriots sure didn't.
86 was the Celtics' last win before
08. So, I mean, you had the Celtics really were your only, they won two titles in the 80s. And that was it. In the 70s, obviously you had some legit Celtics teams, Bruins early in that decade. But so now we're at a point where this really is crazy second nature. It's just, this is just what we do. And it's like almost this blah, well.
It's been a strong millennium so far.
Strong to quite strong. Yes.
half a dozen from the Patriots.
So half a dozen from the Patriots. The Red Sox have been on fire. The Celtics won in what, 2008?
Yes.
Bees won 3 years later. So it's been a really nice run. And the ones that I feel worst for in this whole thing are our children.
Because they're spoiled?
Because, well, the children of most everybody from here, they're spoiled. They think this is what you grow up with. The Red Sox win it. What, four or five times in 15 years? That's not normal.
Yeah, they've had four, correct?
Yeah.
Four.
You're making me do math now, but
four,
yes.
4, 7, 13, and 18?
Yeah, so, yeah. So it's been a nice run for those guys. The Patriots have their six, of course, and I've never been to one of those parades. I mean, I know you have.
Yeah, it was easy. I used to live within a block or two of the typical parade route.
Yep.
You know, a couple different spots I lived, and nothing quite like it. I mean, you're right. Boston has gotten used to it. I remember the Bruins one was a little bit unique because it was a bunch of fans who their diehard team in Boston finally won. So they came out, and it was a sunny week. I think it was a Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, it was in the middle. It was like, I think it was June, if memory serves correctly. I actually watched Game 7 at the home of our guest later,
okay,
Steve Tempesta. Yeah, figured I should, while the hometown team, which by default is my team, was clinching, I should be in the presence of hockey.
You were.
I know, and that was the only way to do it. Like, even if I know hockey well enough, and am I hairy if I needed to broadcast it? Probably not. But do I understand the game? Do I appreciate the game? By all means. But I need to be around somebody who like lives, sleeps, eats, and breathes it. So it was me and Stevie and his two sons sitting down in the basement. It was before craft beer was all their age. So I think we were drinking Bud Lights. But it was awesome to be able to watch it with somebody who was a diehard Bruins fan. And immediately, and it's just funny the things that you remember, like all of a sudden his phone starts blowing up and people are making plans for when they're going to go to the sporting goods store and get the Stanley Cup champions gear. And I'm sitting there going, well, these are grown men. But it's fun. I mean, it always brings out the little boy in all of us. And we talked about Roy Campanella and Jackie Robinson. It always brings it out in all of us when your team wins. And it's really a source of regional pride, even for people among us who aren't fans.
And that's the thing about hockey fans. You know, they just are really, really passionate and about the Bruins specifically. So they waited and, you know, they got their special celebration. And this one for the Patriots, yeah, it's a little bit routine to have six in this two-decade span, but at the same time, almost everyone was counting them out this year, about two-thirds of the way through the season. So it was really sweet because they had to go through a lot. They had to go through the best two offenses to do it. They had to go on the road to Arrowhead to do it. They had to go into overtime, and they really earned it. And then what about that performance with Belichick and the defense to shut the Rams down to 3 points like that? I mean, the odds of that are quite low. In fact,
you're going to talk about the prop bet.
Well, the prop bet that I heard about was that it was 500 to 1
Yep.
If you wagered on the Rams finishing with exactly 3 points.
Yes.
And people actually did it.
People won it.
And, you know, they must have been thinking, yeah, this is a complete long shot, 500-1 for this team that was in that 54-51 game against the Chiefs. I mean, after that game, to have predicted that they would score 3 points in the Super Bowl, people probably would have put it at more like 50,000-1, not 500-1.
Utterly bizarre. And after we had a Super Bowl last year, and I guess this is testament to the Patriots and their ability to basically do the football version of code talking. Like, they can play with whoever they need to play with, and they can scheme with whoever they need to scheme with. They're kind of chameleon-y in that way. But we had last Super Bowl where there wasn't a punt, to this year's Super Bowl where the Rams punted on their first 8 possessions.
Prompting you to be sending out pictures of Hecker.
Johnny Hecker for MVP.
As the likely MVP of the team.
He's a beast, though. I mean, if you're thinking about punters that can execute a fake punt athletically, and if you needed them to play another position, could they? He's at the top of your list. I mean, and that's no joke. He's not like Pat McAnally where he's scoring a perfect 50 on the Wonderlic test. But as far as athletic punters go, there's nobody better. And he can do just about anything he wants to do. He's a great punter.
Well, think about their kicking combo. He and Greg Zuerlein, Greg the Leg, who, as you pointed out, hit that winner against the Saints that could have gone 70 yards.
Yeah.
They're probably the best kicking combo in the NFL. And unfortunately for them, they were the two stars because Zuerlein was the only Ram who scored.
Yep.
And Hecker had all those punts.
Yeah. The other weird thing was, as good as Gostkowski and Zuerlein both are, they both missed the field goal.
They did.
And not challenging field goals. And it's not like you could say it was outdoors and the weather was funky or this or that. They just both missed pretty pedestrian field goals.
And wasn't the stat, given that this season in that stadium, kickers were 31-for-31 on field goals? It was the first miss of the season.
You knew the second that came up on the board and Jim Nantz said something, you knew that the field goal was going to, like, I had the spidey sense. I'm like, I know that field goal is going to miss here. It's and it's funny because here everybody wants to talk about it, but I do think for the NFL, they probably want to turn the page on the Patriots. The rest of the country, because I'm sure you have it and I have it too, like, if I deign to look at my Facebook feed, I look at it and people are disinterested in the game, are not terribly, it's just, it's the Patriots, big deal, who cares? And that even includes a lot of Southern California people, that this wasn't a big deal because it really is so ho-hum for a lot of the country. Yeah, the Patriots are there again. It's almost like they need to tiger-proof the NFL.
Right. Well, the thing that contributes to that feeling right now is just the way that the game played out.
Yes,
the fact
absolutely.
That they're only 16 points scored, and it was sort of a slow-moving game because the Patriots are trying to control the clock, and then the Rams had all those three and outs, that there wasn't any sort of back-and-forth, high-flying action that we all anticipated. So I think that contributes to it. But the thing that you can't deny is that Brady and Belichick are now the best ever at what they have done. And I think that does give something to the fans. It gives a new benchmark for other players and coaches to strive toward, and the fans to cheer for their guys to try and come somewhere close to that standard that Brady and Belichick have set.
Right. And I will agree, it's, they just keep building. And you hate to give too much credit to a coach, but I think it goes to Belichick and the culture and the people that they surround themselves with and just kind of the organization as a whole more than anything else. And it's always hard to say product of a system versus would Brady have been as good if he was playing on the, Houston Texans? Maybe not. Maybe there's your parallel universe where he wouldn't have been because he goes in, they're expecting too much. They did a nice job. If you think all the way back to 2001, they did a nice job of kind of training wheels and you have to walk before you can run type stuff. And because nobody comes out as a fully formed Tom Brady immediately. the other thing that was funky about him is, and I mean, this is one of those like Malcolm Gladwell, 10,000 hours. The Beatles didn't just start out as the Beatles. They were playing 5 or 6 gigs a day in Germany and really learning to work together and experiment with things. Steve Martin was doing 5 or 6 comedy shows a day before he hit it big. There's that element of you need to just do it and get the repetitions and game speed repetitions. And Brady had that to a degree at Michigan, but he didn't have it that you would have looked at this guy and said, okay, this guy is going to be that. It was, and don't forget, Belichick really hadn't been terribly successful where he was either.
Yeah, you're exactly right. He didn't have a career like you look at somebody now like Tua, who's in the Heisman race from his freshman year, and every year he's going to the championship game. He's going to come out with a whole extra realm of experience compared to somebody like Tom Brady.
And against SEC defenses.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do we think he's going to have the career in the NFL that Brady has had? No.
Yeah, you'd be foolish to think so.
But the fact that Brady wouldn't have done as well for the Texans and Belichick hadn't done as well with the Browns and the Jets, I think it's okay. They both helped each other get to the pinnacle. And would they have been able to do it alone? Probably not. But no one else has done it. No one else has won 6. So.
Right. And that's the name of the game is ultimately you're judged by have you won? Have you met expectations? Don't forget 6 weeks ago, people were barely certain that the Patriots were playing because everybody had been so quick to write them off that they're just done. He looks old. Like the number of texts that I have from people who are diehard Patriots fans or Facebook posts that I could have screen capped. Like I could have made a really nice photo book for people of, do you remember back in December when you guys were just giving up on the Patriots and cared not at all about them?
Well, Brady looked like he was injured. He was hobbling around, and that's the thing that you could say he's not going to be able to overcome this if his knee is hurting him this badly that he can barely move out of the pocket.
How much of that, though, do you think is them bird-dogging somebody?
I think they got that. What week was their bye week? It seemed like he came back and then those
That was the game against the Jets that just seemed like a bye week.
Okay. Maybe that was it.
All games against the Jets are bye weeks.
Right.
Yeah,
he became a new man all of a sudden in the stretch run.
Yes.
Physically.
Well, do you remember though, like, and again, I'm not a diehard Patriots fan. I'm a football fan. Like I love to watch football. I'll watch just about anybody except the Browns. Actually, I'd watch the Browns now, but I love to watch football. I enjoy the game, the strategy, how hard everybody works to get to where they are. Like all the backstories to me are super fascinating. That's why I watch. But I'm not a diehard Patriots fan. When they lost that game in Miami, you would have thought that Brady had broken both his legs, Joe Theismann style, was never going to play again. Bill Belichick had left the building and had sworn he was never going to come back. Gronk was sitting at the beach bar up at the Nazwa. Like, you would have thought...
Trying to figure out how to tackle somebody.
Right. You would have thought that the band had broken up. And everything was gone, and you would have thought that the Miami Dolphins were going to win the Super Bowl the next week. Like that, but I mean, I think that's also kind of an indictment of our culture now where everything is what happened now as opposed to what's going on later. And I want to talk about some of that stuff later as it pertains to the Lakers and the Celtics, but we'll get to that. So, but yeah, great sports week up here. A lot of fun to watch. Congratulations to the Patriots and all their fans. And interesting note, though, because it was 60-something degrees on Tuesday when they had the parade. Did you know? I didn't know this. Restaurant patios are seasonally open by law in Boston. So you can't open a patio before, I don't know what the date is, but you can't open a restaurant patio before X date.
Okay, I was confused because I think there's a restaurant called Patty O's.
No, like you can't open like an outdoor seating area.
P-A-T-I-O.
Yeah.
Okay.
Patio, veranda, whatever you want to call it. You can't open a thing like that until a specific date.
Right.
But a lot of these restaurants looked at this and were like, we have overflow seating and we can staff this appropriately. And there are people here who want to sit outside and watch the parade go by Fine us.
Well, that's the thing. It goes right down Boylston Street.
Fine us.
And it's just restaurant after restaurant that have patios.
Fine us. Yeah. Yeah. I'm taking the fine, taking the penalty.
Right.
But, and then that comes to a point of, like, you think about goodwill. Like, if you're the city of Boston, just say, it's 66 degrees.
Go ahead. We're good. City holiday.
Rock and roll. Make it happen. And just, yeah. I mean, I learned that from watching. I don't watch anything. From listening to NPR, WGBH yesterday. Jim and Marjorie were talking about that. So, but yeah, it's like, it's one of those things. It should just, if it's fun, do it. Like, that's a memory for people. Like, a memory is not sitting inside and going, oh, there's the parade. Yes, I would like my water refilled. That's just boring. I don't know. Just my thoughts on whatever matter. All right, so the rest of the sports, I guess as long as we're talking about Boston, we'll keep it up. Last night, Rajon Rondo with a big shot. Did you see it on ESPN this morning?
Well, I saw the shot last night.
Okay, did you see some before the game? And this is kind of getting back to my point, because we're all so quick to get all over people for the type of people that we perceive them to be. And I'm admittedly not a Rajon Rondo fan. But Rondo's out there before the game messing around, and he's doing something with his son, who's probably 6 or 7, just a kid, you know, like kind of right in between, in the same sort of area age-wise as our kids are. And Rondo is playing around and hits a shot from the elbow. And
That elbow.
And so the juxtaposition of him hitting that shot before the game, playing with his kid, and in the game, like the ball basically bounces around like it's a plinko, it's a plinko board. Like the Celtics had
4 chances to win it.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden the ball just pops to Rondo and he takes the last second shot, and first shot in 13 years, first game winner in 13 years.
Just an amazing play.
And just bizarre.
And there's a lot to be said about the fact that he was shooting that shot at that elbow. You know, first of all, he's back home. That's how he described it afterwards.
Yeah.
What does it feel like to walk into the Garden? It feels like home.
Yeah.
And so he's done it so much that of all the places for him to hit one, why wouldn't it be in the gym that he's taken the most shots in?
Right.
And then also just he's relaxed with his family, you know, the good vibes. But then on a more serious note, he's practicing shots that he knows he can take and make. You know, his three-point shooting has gotten better, but he's not known as an outside shooter.
Right.
But, you know, he can hit a 15-foot elbow jumper.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's smart of him. He's practicing the shots he can take and will take.
And that he'll get.
Right.
That he'll get a little bit of cushion and can make that shot.
I mean, I doubt, you'll have to tell me on that film that you saw, I doubt that it was tipped 4 times before he picked it up.
But, I mean, it looks eerily similar. My thought was, you're watching it on ESPN and you go, we all tend to forget that these athletes are somebody's son or somebody's daughter or somebody's husband or wife or father. Like, it takes they get taken out of context a lot. And when you watch Rondo fooling around on the court with his son, you go, well, if I was in that situation, that would be exactly what I would be doing. And then after the game, his kid comes up and he's got these big wide eyes and I think he's missing one of his front teeth. And he's looking up at dad with just like this, like dad is a god. That's awesome. It was super cool to see.
Yeah, for him, it certainly was. And then for the son to have seen that shot and then that crazy celebration where Rondo is hugging him like Rondo is his 6-year-old son.
Yeah.
Which I thought was noteworthy because there's been, with everything that's happened in the last week, talk about LeBron and the divide in that locker room, I thought he made it a point to hang on to Rondo and really be a part of that celebration.
Yeah.
On purpose.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure he would have done that if it was Ingram, for example, or Lonzo Ball. You know, Rondo being the veteran, I think,
who wasn't named in any of the potential trades, the Pelicans.
Right. He wasn't on the front list there for the potential trades. I just took note of that I think LeBron tried to take advantage of that moment and appear to be more of a teammate with these guys than he'd looked in the last week, because it was not a good week for LeBron and the Lakers locker room.
No, well, and a lot has been made of this whole trading deadline thing. and the Pelicans seemingly knowing that they are going to lose Anthony Davis, but they weren't going to trade him before the end of the season. And they weren't going to trade him before the trading deadline, and they weren't going to trade him for things that they didn't want to get.
And if they are okay with that package from the Lakers, they're confident that they can get it this summer after playing out this season and not playing as well, so they get a better draft pick.
Right.
So they're like, okay, Anthony Davis is leaving. All right, so now what do we do? Well, we might as well – we're not going to make the playoffs this year, so we might as well, quote-unquote, tank, get the best draft pick we can this year, and then when we get – when we make the trade this summer and we get a bunch of young players and draft picks, we'll just have one more good draft pick because it's our own.
Right. And that it's an interesting thought. I mean, and honestly, in the West, they still have a chance. They have to leapfrog teams, but there's nothing that's the Clippers currently sit in the eight at 30 and 26, but there's a lot of clustering between 30 and 26 and 24 and 31. So
They're within striking distance.
Yeah.
Their mentality was, hey, Anthony Davis has been injured a little bit. Let's get him back. Let's make a push. But the thing that happened at the trade deadline that indicates that they're not going to do that is that they traded Mirotić.
Yes.
So one of their best scorers is gone, and they are really sending the signal that even if Anthony Davis plays the rest of the season, because there was talk that he wasn't even going to suit up.
Right.
Latest announcement on that was that he is going to play. So it seems like they're going to play out this string, ideally miss the playoffs, get a better draft pick, and then have the phone ringing off the hook in early July, come up with some huge trade package. They'll get to pick, they'll get to cherry pick the one they like best, and then retool next year. And if, you know, maybe the Lakers package will be the best. Who knows? I doubt it. I think the Celtics will probably present the best package to them this summer. So we'll just have to wait and see.
It was interesting to see, though, the take that was thrown out there about maybe the Pelicans, by soliciting trade offers from the Lakers, nuked the rest of the Lakers season.
And absolutely.
I love that. I love the chess match that goes along with it where, okay, now you have a bunch of guys in the locker room who all are watching their back because they all think they're going. And let's face it, that Laker team was really poorly constructed. It's just a complete bunch of, I think I might have said this on the show last week, just because I have a bunch of cantaloupe parts doesn't mean I can make a cantaloupe. That's the Lakers. Like, they have a bunch of really nice cantaloupe parts. We put them all together and you get this gross mess of garbage. And that's really what it is. And as much as LeBron, you can look and say, LeBron, is he or isn't he the best player of his generation? Well, if he's not the, he's one of the. So regardless of your feelings about him, you have to admit that he's one of the. But even he's not going to save them. And if I'm the Pelicans, it's not like I want to say, here's this close to a generational talent, really, in Anthony Davis. I'm going to give you that generational talent, and I'm going to get a bunch of spare parts that the Lakers can't win with. Why would you want to basically create the Louisiana Lakers with a bunch of guys who just, like, they are, when LeBron was out, they were a completely rudderless ship.
Yeah, last year, it was that team with
just gross
with Julius Randle, and they didn't do anything.
Gross.
So now Julius Randle's in New Orleans. You're going to bring the rest of the team over. It's going to be the Lakers of 2017-18 and Drew Holiday.
Yeah.
And so, no, they've decided at this point, no, that's not what we want.
All right. We'd rather, silly to think that was.
Right. Let's wait and see if we can get Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown and some draft picks.
Now you're talking.
Now you're talking.
Now you have two guys who can – you could throw those two in there and throw Drew Holiday with him, and throw one more guy in.
And they've got Julius Randle, so they've got a bigger guy.
You have a legit team that can contend.
Right.
And you have three guys at your core in Brown, Tatum, and Holiday that are all mature, that are good guys who can take the mantle, who can give the soundbite after the game. Like, they're good core, like, as opposed to the guys at the Lakers who – Lonzo will always have LeVar. And just when you think you've controlled that demon, somebody's going to say something ridiculous and all of a sudden it's going to take the focus off what's going on the court because it always happens. So, I don't know. It's that has been an interesting thing. The other thing that I was really stoked about, and I know you were too, was I was really upset when I saw the ticker saying that Tobias Harris was getting traded to the Sixers.
Right.
And the first thing I thought of is, what's going to happen to Boban?
I know it.
Boban gets to go.
He gets to go with his buddy Tobias.
I know. Which the bromance continues.
Really smart on the part of Philly.
It's smart on the part of everybody.
I mean, I wonder if... I'd like to know how that conversation went. Because, as you know, I think Boban is a very valuable
player. It's kind of like if you got traded to another men's league team, like, that would be what would happen. And somebody would be like, just take him.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd want you to come with me.
Yeah, and somebody would just be like, just take him. Like, nobody... There's not a whole lot of market for 5'10 guards who can't shoot but set picks.
But the thing is...
But Boban is actually a good player.
No,
I'm with you.
You guys are both extremely valuable and sometimes underappreciated. But the thing about... The thing that's fascinating to me is, for Philly, you know, they could have couched it in the terms of, you know, we want to keep Tobias happy, you know, because he's going to be a free agent after this season. So if we're going to take a risk on this guy with an expiring contract and give you a bunch of good draft picks, we want to have increase the chances that he's going to re-sign with us. So we want his best friend to come with him. But at the same time, and that certainly would have been an important consideration for them, but at the same time, maybe they use that as an angle to get Boban,
yeah,
who they see as actually a more valuable piece than he's been used as. And I think he is. I'm waiting for a coach to use him correctly, which is instead of saying, oh, he doesn't really fit into today's NBA because he's not 6'10", and his number one attribute isn't speed, it's why don't we make the other team adjust to us?
Yeah.
Let's put in this 7'3" force who, if he gets the ball in on the block, he is going to score. And then when he gets fouled, he's going to make his free throw. And if we pass the ball through him on the elbow, he's going to distribute because he's a really good passer. And the guy has so much skill. He's the biggest guy in the NBA. Why not use him? Why not put him in for 15 to 18 minutes a game and make the other team try to figure out, well, are we going to stay small so we can try and outquick him? Or are we going to have to come up with somebody to try and defend him on the block?
Yeah, it's... The Clippers are used to having big guys like Keith Kloss, and that doesn't usually work for them. So I think they're still, the franchise is still reeling from that. Back in the 90s, he was horrible. He was a Central Connecticut State guy. But I was happy to see that the two of them are back together, or are still together, and all appears to be right with the world on the NBA front. So I don't know. And, you know, the other thing in terms of the Pelicans' collateral damage, the Celtics appear to be kind of collateral damage in that too, where now you have guys who are thinking they're getting traded there. It's like it's the league as it exists right now is they've sort of chosen the path that they're on. And in some ways, I think the league is on a great path. The players have personalities, and they show them via social media. And the two guys that I think of, Boban and Tobias Harris,
yep,
like their Instagram and the stuff that they do with each other, it's just fun. It's supposed to be fun. And the guys, you know, LeBron will post video of himself watching another game because they're gym rats, just like you're a gym rat. Like if they're not playing it, they're watching it. And the league has helped itself out. But where things have hurt themselves and where they sort of need to figure this whole thing out is the midseason trade demand. And because the last 2 years, you've had the season drastically changed by last year's Kawhi, this year it's Anthony Davis, a player who doesn't want to be where he is and is trying to orchestrate a move. And I understand that they have, you know, yeah, they sign contracts, but it's like with any of us. If you were working in a job that you weren't happy at every day, you would have to go and talk to your boss and either, hey, I'm interviewing other places, or just start interviewing other places. We have that degree of freedom, but then again, we're not under contract. And if they decided one day, hey, Fox, you're gone, get out of here, they don't have to pay me anything else. Those guys are under contract. The NBA just has to find a way to put a lid on that whole, it's almost like a midseason free agency, for lack of anything better.
Yeah, I think one step in the right direction would be to take a page out of baseball's book And if you have a star player leaving free agency, give them a compensatory draft pick. You know, it should not be that a star like Anthony Davis leaves and the team he leaves gets nothing.
Right.
I mean, the thing about basketball is you only have 15 guys. You only have 5 guys on the court, and one star can swing everything.
Yep.
You know, Durant goes to Golden State. They win three championships. If they win this year, 3 in a row. He changed the entire landscape of the NBA by leaving as a free agent from one team to another. So why not give Oklahoma City a high draft pick?
Right.
You know, it's not that hard to figure out. Baseball's done it, and I think that would lessen the blow a little bit, because one guy leaves, it changes everything.
The only challenge that I have with it is, and your mileage may vary, in the NBA, it seems like high draft picks are far more impactful than they are in Major League Baseball. And the example that I can use is like Kyler Murray, who the A's drafted Kyler Murray 9th, and everybody thought that was going to be a sure thing. He got a nice signing bonus. Hey, he's going to go and play baseball. And then when people started to think about it and say, wait a second, you look at elite quarterbacks in the NFL, those guys are now having 15, 18-year careers, making a lot of money, and more, in most cases, more than a professional baseball player would. And you're immediately getting that big contract or close to it right out of college versus baseball, where you get your signing bonus deal and then you have a couple years of riding the bus. Most cases. Like if you're Kyler Murray and you sign for $5 million, you don't have to, but it's probably a good thing to do with your teammates. Baseball, the chances of a guy who's drafted as a sandwich guy. So, and what I mean when I say the compensatory picks, the after the first round ones, the sandwich guys are, and I haven't run math on it, to me, a sandwich guy would be a lower likelihood of success in baseball than in basketball.
Yep.
So where in basketball, if you look at it and go, all right, we're tanking and I'm going to let this free agent go and I already have this pick and I already have this pick, all right, you can basically retool your team in one offseason and almost play for that. But I guess we would have to wait until that bears out. So
yeah, I mean, I haven't thought it all the way through, but why not just make it that if you, for instance, draft a guy in the top 10 in the NBA and he leaves as a free agent, then if he, let's say he goes to the Lakers, what that means is you just get the Lakers first round pick the next year.
Right. And
you know,
and,
at a minimum.
Right.
As a starting point.
And they do it with Major League Baseball where guys get slotted. Like if you lose Luis Alcia, you don't get a sandwich pick. You
right.
may get no compensatory pick based upon his contract status. If you lose Bryce Harper, okay, that's a different story. Machado, different story, even though, eh. And we'll talk about them later. So we'll take a quick break. We'll be joined by Ryan O'Connor, local sports writer, who will shed a little bit of light on the worlds of basketball and hockey. You've been listening to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. Welcome back to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. Lauren Fox, Andrew Hansen, and we are joined by Ryan O'Connor, who is a local sports reporter, and I'm going to describe him as a sports junkie. Is that accurate?
Oh, absolutely.
I just sprung that one on you. So
might be an understatement.
Yeah.
That's why he's always welcome on the show.
I know. I think for any of us, it's an understatement. But, hey, there are worse things.
Yeah, birds of a feather.
Yes, basketball season. On the boys' side here in Bedford, I know we've been a little bit surprised. The boys have lost their last 5. Watching them early in the season, it really looked like they were going to have a very good, very competitive team. They've hit some bumps. Outside of what you've seen from them, any surprises for you among the top teams in the state?
Yeah, you know, I'd say it's good to see, you know, Salem back in the conversation, and obviously Londonderry is always kind of there. But I wouldn't, you know, Division I in New Hampshire high school basketball, it really is, you know, I feel like every year You have a different set of five or six teams that kind of rise to the top, and sometimes there's some similarities. But honestly, I can't say there's any huge surprises other than, you know, maybe Central being sort of middling, but obviously they had the coaching change this year, and Goffstown being as good as they've been, you know, almost a 500 team and actually ahead of Bedford in the standings right now is certainly a surprise, since they're coming up from Division II after, you know, really a subpar year last year. So they've kind of been revitalized a little bit and been competitive, especially in their last four or five games. But yeah, outside of that, you know, I mean, you mentioned Bedford, and obviously they're a little disappointing. But, you know, talking to Coach Elmendorf earlier this year, he sort of alluded to the fact that he kind of caught lightning in a bottle the last couple of years, because he had a team of really good basketball players. And Bedford's not exactly a boys basketball town. You know, it's a hockey town, it's a soccer town, it's a football town, it's a lacrosse town, it's a baseball town. But it hasn't always really been known for producing good basketball teams. And in the last couple of years, they really have had almost an elite team. And I think last year was the year that, after making it to the finals the year before, that, you know, last year was the year that I think everybody kind of thought, oh, this is going to be Bedford's year. And obviously getting upset in the playoffs and stuff was you know, really tough on them. So then this year, you know, he comes in and he's got just this great group of athletes, but they're not necessarily great basketball players. So it's really more of a credit to the team and the players and their athleticism that they've been as competitive as they have been, you know, in a very deep, talented pool of Division I teams.
Yeah, it's even looking at it right at the beginning of this year, too, I think a lot of us looked at it and said, they have a lot of athletes on that team. They have talented guys who've got football experience and have, I mean, I remember Hanson and I talked about it during one of the broadcasts. They have been in the spotlight. And so for them, it appears they have the athletic ability. They're not going to get phased in situations that would phase a lot of guys who haven't done that before. That really hasn't come to fruition. And losing the last five has been tough, and they'll have a tough road to even make the playoffs at this point. They face off against Exeter tonight.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, what do they have? Four or five straight losses, and then, yeah, five straight losses, right? And now it's probably going to be six tonight, you'd assume. I mean, unless they really Exeter comes out flat and Bedford plays, you know, the game of the year, which, you know, they almost did at Londonderry, right? They almost beat Londonderry at Londonderry earlier in the year, and Londonderry is right there. You know, they're a top 3-4 team in the state right now, and so it's not out of the question, but it would be tough to see that happening, I'd say.
How about on the girls' side? What have you seen from BG, who's now 12-0, and the girls, who are 11-2, and, you know, they've gotten hot recently, seeming to gel a little bit here offensively. We've had the chance to do the last two games. What have you seen from them in terms of trying to find a way to chase down BG?
Yeah, it sort of feels like one of those years where it's BG and everybody else, doesn't it? You know, but I would say if so, obviously Bedford, you know, they had the really tough loss to BG earlier in the year, and since then they've won 9 of 10, right? So they're right back in the conversation. It does feel like, you know, they're sort of in that group of teams right behind BG that's sort of playing for the right to lose to BG in the championship game. But I'll say this, you know, there's still a lot of talent on this team. Coach Gibbs has done a great job of sort of, you know, isolating the players from, you know, the outside distractions and just keeping their focus on basketball. He's really honing their talent. They've got great senior leadership with Kendra Bernard and Lizzie Stevenson. And I saw that firsthand in a road game, I think it was last week at Central, you know, which is not the easiest place to win. And Central's got a very good team this year. And Bedford went in, and even though the score might not have indicated, I really felt like they controlled most of that game. And so I would say, you know, if anybody's going to have a shot at BG this year, I think it would be a really cool story if Bedford, you know, the last 2 years, they lost to BG in the playoffs, deep in the playoffs, but they beat them in the regular season. You know, if they could somehow flip that script this year, I think it would make a great story.
Yeah, it really would. And, you know, we've done the last two games, and we've seen this three-headed scoring monster. You know, really, the versatility from the scoring has been impressive, with Isabella King in the starting lineup the last couple of games with Kendi injured. You know, Isabella, Lizzie, and Allie have combined for over 40 points in both games. One of them, they combined for over 50 points And then you've got Amanda Jonas, who scored 6 points in both games in the post. So the one thing they have going for them is putting an entire team out on the floor where everybody's a weapon.
Yeah, and absolutely. And you mentioned Isabella King. She had a great game against Central, and it's actually really good to see her in the starting lineup. I haven't actually personally seen her in the starting lineup, but when I did see her, you know, she played like a seasoned veteran, and I think Coach Gibbs actually described her as a John Havlicek of the team. And obviously, you know, Havlicek, when he started his career, he was the best sixth man in the NBA, and he came off the bench and just provided an immediate spark. And that's really what she is. She's a sophomore spark plug. You know, she's young, she's eager, she's aggressive, and she can score.
Yeah, it has been interesting to watch her mature, and we were talking about it the other day. The core of this team, as opposed to last year's team, the core of this team is really younger than it was last year. And not to mention the fact this is a deeper team than last year's team was. And it's almost, yeah, they really did lose some great veterans last year. Mia Roy, Ali Fillion, those are tough to replace. But you have Jonas, who got a year older. Kenny Bernard, got a year older. Lizzie Stevenson, got a year older. And then you have somebody like Isabella King, who sort of finds her way into the lineup and looks like she's been there for years. Like, it's been interesting to see how that has sort of gelled over the course of the season.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they're definitely hitting their stride at the right time. So, you know, I'm obviously hoping, as I'm sure you guys are, to see them really make some noise in the playoffs and maybe give DG a run for their money.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what'll happen. Of course, a lot will depend on the seeding that comes at the end of the season. Hopefully it'll be a matchup of the finals, but last year we got that matchup in the semis. So you never quite know. So now onto the ice, and we're joined by Ryan O'Connor, New Hampshire sports writer. Bedford lost to Pinkerton 3-2 a couple weeks back, and since then has reeled off 4 straight wins. For the Bulldogs in the postseason, it seems like they're getting a lot of scoring from a lot of different guys. A couple games ago, they had a freshman, Brett Nyland, who put two in. Any thoughts on the Bulldogs' path to a title this year?
Yeah, I mean, that loss to Pinkerton, really, it was less of an indictment on Bedford and more of a testament to Pinkerton and how far they've come as a program. I mean, let's be honest, Pinkerton beat Bedford last year as well. And obviously Bedford entered as a lower seed with, I think, 4 losses. And yet, at the end of the day, it was still Bedford competing in the championship game, right? And so Bedford's an established program. And I think for Pinkerton to beat Bedford 2 years in a row, especially after kind of slipping in the playoffs last year, I think it was more Pinkerton kind of saying, yeah, no, we're here. We're here to play. We're here to compete with the best in the state. I mean, as far as Bedford goes, I would say the bigger slip was probably tying Londonderry earlier in the year, which, you know, Londonderry has a traditionally good program, and Peter Bedford's back and he's a very good coach. But, you know, I would say this year probably isn't their most talented team. And so there's no shame ever in a tie, especially to a quality program like Londonderry. But if you look at Bedford's schedule, you know, they're dominating teams that they're usually pretty competitive with. And, you know, the only two blips on the radar were the Pinkerton loss and the Londonderry tie. And I would say that the Pinkerton loss is probably a more quality loss than the Londonderry tie. So I certainly don't, I don't think that Bedford has anything to worry about. I think, you know, obviously, as you alluded to, they bounced back, they've won 4 straight. They're very talented. They're deep. You know, they've obviously, you mentioned Nyland, they've got some great young players that are stepping right in into key spots, and they're succeeding. So I would still say, in my opinion, Bedford's still the odds-on favorite, but I'd watch out for Pinkerton.
Right. It will be interesting to see how that shakes out as we go through the rest of the way. I almost felt like you were talking about RPI like it's college basketball, and we're seeding them to make sure they make the tournament. Strength of schedule, man. Yeah.
Right. That's right.
We're not far from that, scary as that may seem. So on the girls' side, Bedford is in year two of their program. It was a fledgling program last year, but you could really see the improvement as they rolled through the season. They still have some bumps in the road, but by and large, they're good. They seem to be competitive. What have you gathered about the girls on the ice so far this year?
Yeah, I mean, I'll be honest. Tomorrow night's going to be the first time I'm going to see them. And I'm actually really excited about that because last year when I got to see them, they were that first year team. They had a bunch of girls who were literally still learning how to skate. And so I think this year, obviously, most of those girls having a year of varsity experience under their belt. And as you mentioned, they are showing the fruits of that. You know, they might not be a top eight team in the state yet, but they're progressing, right? And I think that's what Coach Byfield wants to see, is he just wants to see progression year to year, and he's certainly seeing that. And so I'm really excited tomorrow night just to see how far they've come, because we know, especially in a game like hockey where bounces impact games so often and little things, I'm curious to see how far they've come and if that, you know, what are they, 4-7? I want to see if that record is really indicative of the talent on the team, or if my hunch is, you know, they're probably a little better than that record shows.
It would seem that way. If you look at it, there are games that they lost to Pinkerton, as an example, 7-3. I think a lot of people were surprised that happened. But and so you'll see them again tomorrow at, 6:40 p.m. They're playing Pinkerton at the Ice Den. So
Saturday night.
Yes, Saturday night.
We're talking Friday. About Friday right
yeah.
now.
Yes, yeah, I'm sorry.
Yeah, we can't go a show without mentioning it's Friday and we're talking about it like it's on Saturday. So you'll have the opportunity to see them then. But by all accounts, in that first game, they should have kept it closer than that. Matty Lucantoni had the 3 goals for the Bulldogs. So I think you'll see a pretty good one tomorrow night.
Yeah, I hope so.
Well, we appreciate it. We appreciate your passion for everything and the fact that we can count on you to be our eyes and ears, places that we can't be. Ryan O'Connor, thanks for the time.
Yeah, it was good talking with you guys.
Take care, Ryan.
Great as always.
Take care.
That was Ryan O'Connor of, I think it's Bedford Bulletin, Bedford Journal. Help me out.
He probably writes for both.
He may write for both. Ryan O'Connor, sports reporter, would be the best way to put it. But it's always fun to talk to a guy who really has his ear to the ground on just about everything. Really just a big help for us. He's like our scout, feet on the street. So, well, we will take a quick break. Come right back. You are listening to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1. Welcome back to Fox on Sports. Lauren Fox, Andrew Hansen, and in the spirit of hockey, because it is hockey season, even though it was in the 60s earlier this week, we wanted to bring on Mr. Hockey, as Andrew Hansen called him. I don't know that he likes that title, but Hansen's going to refer to him as Mr. Hockey.
I don't know why he wouldn't. Mr. Any Sport is a pretty good name, isn't it?
He's modest, and he doesn't think he deserves that title. Anyway, we're joined by Steve Tempesta, the part-time voice in the booth for the Bedford Bulldogs. Stevie, thanks and welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, fellas. I'll take the Mr. Hockey moniker, although there's someone way more valuable out of the Midwest that unfortunately passed away a few years ago.
Oh yes,
Gordie Mr. Howe. Hockey. So.
Yeah. The original.
Believe him. We'll let him have it.
Mr. Hockey 2.0.
He's got to pass the torch to somebody.
Not me. But I appreciate it, though. Thank you, Andrew.
Absolutely. I mean, that's what happened. So Wednesday night, I tuned into Bedford 105.1, and there was your voice, middle of the third period, calling the action between the boys and BG. And it was quite an explosive third period, wasn't it?
It sure was. You know, it was not a quiet game, but a real back-and-forth, very defensive battle in the first period and the second period. Each team had a power play goal, 2-1 going into the third period. And then Bedford scored on a power play 15 seconds into the third period and just unloaded on four BG and beat them 8-3 was the final. But there were 8 goals scored in like a 5-minute time frame. It was, if you listen to that 5 minutes, that you caught most of the game, that's for sure.
Well, and then after the game, when you and Tom were recapping the scoring, it sounded like you were describing an NHL All-Star game with goals every 30 seconds.
It was interesting. You know, the first goal, 15 seconds into the third period, was on a power play. They go to even strength. BG came down and quickly scored. And then Bedford returned the favor. Honest to God, like 10 seconds later, you know, off the faceoff, quick move, bang, bang, goal. There were two long passes that ended up in breakaways. But, you know, one was a beautiful play by Brett Nyland, who split the defense and scored. It was just an exciting third period. Tell you what, Bedford outskated BG in that third period so effectively that it just stifled any type of offensive opportunity BG was mustering, and then capitalized and scored each time.
One of the things that stood out during the broadcast to me was your talk about the skating and the speed of Bedford. And I'm curious, with getting to the puck first, how much of that is actual speed versus skill and strategy? Because you were describing it as if Bedford, either they wanted the puck more or they had more speed, or is it both?
You know, that's a great question, Andrew. You know, I think it's probably a little bit of both. Certainly speed helps. It makes it more difficult for a defender to defend speed. It's really hard to defend speed. But when you get to the puck first, you don't always win that puck battle. So then it takes some skill. Certainly being able to position your body against the boards to prevent the defender from taking the puck away from you and really possessing the puck. The strength of those games really were puck possession, and it entails a lot of being the first person on the puck and be able to control possession of that puck. Therefore, you're going to create more scoring opportunities if you have the puck with your stick, for sure. But I think it's probably a little bit of a combination of both. Certainly positioning and skill on the boards, but getting to that puck first is, you know, paramount to get sort of earn that puck battle.
What do you think about the team's prospects as you head toward the playoffs? They're at 12-1-1. They're sitting atop the standings. Are they the favorite to win it all this year?
You know, that's a great question as well. I talked to Coach Myers before the game just to catch up. I've known Marty for a long time, so you know, both of my boys got to play for him. So I actually had a good conversation with him. I said, tell me what you thought. You know, Bedford and Concord and Pinkerton each exchanged victories against one another recently. You know, Bedford was sitting in the 2 spot or the 3 spot and then quickly jumped back in the 1 spot because Pinkerton beat Concord, but Concord beat, you know, and so on and so on. It was just a fascinating development. I really think it's any man's game, any team's game. I think it'll most likely, my opinion, will probably come down to Pinkerton and to Bedford, most likely in the finals. If they meet, unfortunately, in a semifinal, then one of them will not make it to the final, obviously. But I think those are probably the two toppest of the top teams, you know, the number one and number two. Concord and Hanover are right behind them. Hanover is a team that you don't hear a lot about just because they're not near us, but they're always talented, very well coached. They won a couple years ago. They won last year. They're a fantastic club. They always have good talent, good disciplined hockey. But I think it's going to come down between Pinkerton and Bedford for sure.
It would appear, looking at it, and we just had a conversation with Ryan O'Connor, who's a sports reporter as well. He had the same sort of feeling with it. Pinkerton really appears to be the toughest one of the bunch. I know when Bedford lost to Pinkerton a few weeks back, it seemed like basically from the puck drop, they were down 2-0 and trying to sort of scratch and claw back a bit, which that almost makes it sort of a gut check type of game for the Bulldogs.
Absolutely. And from what I gather from that game, you know, they spotted Pinkerton the 2-goal lead, and then they outplayed him for the remainder of the game. It really was an even back and forth game, but you can't give goals to another team that's as good as you are and expect to win. So you really got to play from beginning to end. That's for sure. But Pinkerton's a formidable opponent. They are a talented, deep team, very much like the Bedford team. So they have 3 or 4 lines, and they can throw all 3 or 4 lines at you.
Yeah, it's funny to watch a hockey game as opposed to a basketball game. Basketball game, you can get behind by 12, 15 points, and with a couple quick turnovers and a couple quick baskets, you can cut a lead in half. With hockey, if you give up a 2-goal lead early in the game, that is a really tough deficit to overcome because it really isn't a game of runs like basketball is.
Generally, it's not. I think you're right on the money. It's really about, you know, possession of the puck and where you pick the puck up on the ice. You know, it's much like football where, you know, you punt and you put a ball, you know, you put a team deep in their zone. It's really hard to score, you know, going 90 yards. Well, the same thing in hockey. You throw that puck in deep and you make the opponent work from behind their net. It makes it really hard to get through 5 skaters to get to the goalie, you know, 180 feet, 185, 190 feet, it's hard to get all the way that, you know, down there to score. So it's really, where do you pick the puck up? What I noticed in that game against BG, there was a lot of neutral zone play, a lot of just missed passes and such, both from both teams, but more so from the side of the Bishop Gurton side. And it was really the speed factor, going back to that, was the forwards were forechecking so aggressively, the defense would be throwing a pass to a player, you know, to their teammate that they normally would catch in a regular game, but because they were being challenged so quickly, they had to give up that pass, and it wasn't connecting at all. Long errant passes, and then it became an offensive zone faceoff from an icing. And it really, you know, it just means that the puck was down in the offensive zone in favor of Bedford. You win a faceoff, you get a quick shot on net. So it is puck possession and you know, where the puck is positioned on the ice. And it's very difficult to have those runs of, let me score three goals and get right back into this game. That just doesn't happen. It did in the third period, interestingly, but they shared goals. But I think you're right on the money. It's hard to do that in hockey. It's hard to come back from a two or a three-goal deficit frequently against very good teams.
Right. Against lesser teams, of course, it's easier to do. But then again, you're not falling into a deficit like that against the lesser team. Well, Steve Tempesta, as always, we appreciate the time and the insight into the hockey program. And enjoy the rest of your day.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on. And I'll see you guys soon around the field for sure.
All right,
great
buddy.
Day, guys.
All right,
sounds
Mr. Hockey.
Good.
See ya.
He's not going to shake that one. I really sort of get the feeling that one will not leave him behind anytime soon. So, all right, we have, 5 minutes or so? Getting back to that Lakers-Celtics game from last night, there have been three Lakers game-winning shots at the Garden. Rondo and who else?
Are we counting Magic's baby hook?
No, it's regular season.
Oh, regular season. Yeah. Gosh, I nothing else was coming to mind besides Magic when you sent me that question this morning. All I could picture was that junior hook in
it
the
It was not
the
junior,
lane.
junior sky hook.
Who else was it?
Nick Van Exel.
Okay.
Which is awesome. So you got Magic throwing in another one from the corner in 87, like a real tough shot. So Magic was one, 87. Van Exel was like 95. And then you have last night. When Magic made his, there were seven Hall of Famers on the court. Who were the seven?
Bird.
Yes.
Parrish.
Yes.
McHale.
Yes.
Magic.
Yes.
Worthy.
Yes.
Kareem.
Yes. You got the toughest one coming. That's always how that works.
Gosh. Who else would that have been? Was he a starter? Oh, Bill Walton.
No.
Oh, Bill was he on the team in 87? He was on the championship
team
in 86.
He was on the team. I don't know if he was still kicking around that long, if his feet hadn't gotten to him yet. Think guard, stopper.
Michael Cooper?
Freckles. Dennis Johnson.
Yeah. Okay.
Which, it's funny, because I was thinking about it, and those were the seven names that popped into my head. It was not my... I loved Michael Cooper. The high socks, the thunderous dunks, he was shooting threes when it was 23-9, and it was like, that was a big deal, hitting that three. And that used to be one of my thrills when I was a kid, watching Michael Cooper shoot threes. Michael Cooper and Byron Scott. But you could make an argument for Cooper. Cooper had a really solid NBA career. Dennis Johnson, I was like, I don't know if the stats bear him out. And they really don't. 14 points a game, 5 assists a game. Great. When you read the players in NBA history who say, this guy was the best defensive player I ever played against, that's where you go, that's why that guy's in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, and he was, you know, at the point
that's why.
For those championship teams.
Yeah.
It makes me think of Klay Thompson, who is a 20-point scorer, and he's known as one of the best perimeter defenders, and he shows incredible energy on both ends.
Yeah.
And, you know, he'll be there eventually because he's one of the best shooters ever, too. But he's the type of guy that on his points alone, you might not think he's a Hall of Famer. But if you add in the fact that he's an incredible shooter percentage-wise and his defense, he'll be there as well.
Well, and his position on the iconic team of the era. That's what will make it for him. The interesting thing about DJ, he was 5'9 when he graduated high school and sprouted to 6'3 and was playing street ball in L.A. And somebody saw him and convinced him to play junior college, and then he went to Pepperdine. and then he was in the NBA.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, just I love hearing stuff like that. So Dennis Johnson was your seventh guy who was in there. Baseball Final Jeopardy. So if you haven't seen it, it's on a website called Sporkle, S-P-O-R-C-L-E. There have been 41 questions over the years that have been baseball Final Jeopardy questions or baseball related. Now asking me what teen duo got their start by playing baseball with a frog in whatever year it was, 2004. I'm never going to know that.
Yeah, I missed that one as
well. Yeah, that was Beavis and Butthead. I was like, crisscross?
I was like, frogs? What is going on here? I thought this was baseball.
Crisscross? it was too late for them. That was 92. I got 36 out of 41. I was pleased.
All right, you beat me.
I was annoyed. Well, I was trying to beat... I saw it on Deadspin, of course. Barry Pachesky, who's one of the writers, had 36 to 41.
You tied him.
I was trying to beat him, and I should have, because I missed the stupidest question.
Which one did you
miss? The two teams, two Major League Baseball teams whose names don't start with end with an S.
Red Sox, White Sox?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Because
I'm sitting there thinking, like, Heat or, like...
You're thinking NBA? Jazz.
Osprey, Geese, Jazz. Like, I went ridiculous. So, yeah, I should have beat him. Failed. We have, 30 seconds or so? We still haven't talked about the Baseball Hall of Fame. Baseball is weighing a bunch of major rule changes, which I like a lot. The one that I like the most is when you bring a pitcher in the game, he has to face a minimum of three batters.
Right, but the asterisk on that one was unless he finishes the inning, right?
Yeah, that's so fine, though.
Yeah, that would be phenomenal.
Hey, just you talk about speeding up the game, improving the game. I don't know how I feel about the whole DH thing. And that was the other thing I wanted to bring up. Because for me, there's always a novelty. If people listen to the show every week, I'm sorry. I enjoy when athletes get tested in things they don't ordinarily do. Like, I enjoy the, who are we talking about? Deion Sanders, when he's playing for the Braves, but he's also playing for the Falcons. And, oh, yeah, by the way, he's lining up in the slot and catching a pass. Like, that's fun. And so there's the fish out of water element of a pitcher getting up to hit, and it's a guy who's jacked like Bumgarner who just hits bombs. Or like the kid from LSU who hit nukes last year.
Right, yeah.
Like, I enjoy that stuff. So, and that's what bums me out about the potential of a DH on both sides, is that all of a sudden it's done. But I do understand the piece of it where I have pitchers who, that'd be like having a kicker on offense every 9 plays. I mean, really.
Yeah, those are some major potential changes, including lowering the mound, having a 20-second pitch clock. So we'll have to talk about those in the coming weeks as we really get geared up for spring training and, you know, these potential rule changes continue to be debated.
It will be interesting to see. So we will leave you with that food for thought. Pitchers and catchers report in, 2 weeks or less than that? And Bryce Harper and Manny Machado are still not signed. That said, we want to thank our guests, Ryan O'Connor and Steve Tempesta. Thank everybody here at Bedford 105.1, Bill, Colleen, and, of course, Harry for putting the show together. Thank you to my co-host, Andrew Hansen, who is dressed like he actually has real business to conduct today, but I think that's a complete facade. And that is it. Have a wonderful sports week. We'll catch you again. You've been listening to Fox on Sports on Bedford 105.1.